Natalie has very cunningly, I think, positioned herself, which she isn't positioned herself, she is a medical anthropologist, but this enables her to talk about things in very official places where you wouldn't get away with it if you actually said, this is what I believe. And so she's able to present various different viewpoints and get them aired and discussed openly and without people feeling threatened. And it's been a very successful campaign, I think, Natalie.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, David. It's 20 years that I've been teaching in medical schools and universities and hospitals. And it came about because I had a vision in 1998, and I was instructed by spirit or whatever to register in medical anthropology, to have a language to question psychiatry. Peter, don't listen. So, and I will come shortly about why death is an understanding of consciousness and death is so important in this. Now, I don't often get a chance to put a ship in any talks that I do, but I put it in just to say that doctors and their patients may have belief systems that are like ships that pass in the night. And I wanted to address that. And when you look at people's beliefs about existence, existential beliefs, it's really core to the way people believe their life goes. It's technology. So I wrote the book for ourselves, for medical and healthcare professionals, and for people who've been through the mental health system, carers and survivors. And it's also written for psychiatrists who are becoming aware that the traditional training doesn't fit the spirit of our times, and psychologists who are aware of personal narratives, and also people who are dissatisfied, like new migrants and refugees. And it was written for all of us. So at the moment, we're acknowledging colonization of in Canada and Native Americans and Australian Aboriginals. And they want their understanding of consciousness to be acknowledged and not to be pathologized. And the gentleman you see there is Joseph Rael. He's from New Mexico, and he had visions since he was a child, and he's now approached the UNESCO and the United Nations to set up peace chambers across the world. And I've got the picture of cultural chasms, because there's like a chasm between different understandings. And the psychiatrist Arthur Kleinman, he said, if you can't see that your own culture has its own sets of interests, emotions and biases, how can you expect to deal successfully with someone else's culture? And he suggests that biomedical beliefs are one powerful set of beliefs, and so are social and spiritual beliefs. Now, I've put up the part one of the book where I look at different beliefs about the body and the self and human identity. I've got chapters on making babies. I give a four-hour seminar on different ways of making babies according to different cultures in the world, because I've worked in India and in Africa, and I've worked with Somali people. So, and beliefs about women's behavior. My chapter 8 is on cultural U-turns, and that is what changes What do? We set our laws, the government set our laws based on our beliefs, and then they change them 10 or 20 or 30 years later. And so this is what is a cultural U-turn? And it is this changing thing. And I think the reason I'm interested in it is because I think it's time for one in the area of mental health. Then part two of the book, it starts with two chapters on death and dying and beliefs about survival beyond death. And Peter is mentioned a few times, and Elizabeth. Because our understanding of consciousness beyond death is really important to the way we interpret certain unusual experiences that are said to be, that are pathologized or made out to be schizophrenia. And it's taken me till I'm a crone, till my hair is white, before I can say what I mean in this book. Because as David said, I made a living going round places saying, this society does that, and the other society believes this, and these people do that, and these are the practices. And I never said what I believed until my hair went completely white, and I feel free enough to do so now. So, and you can't imagine, remember David gave a talk on Beata Bishop. You can't imagine the number of times Beata told me to dye my hair. So God bless her. So the first two chapters of part two are on dying and survival. And then I've got five chapters on anomalous experiences, unusual experiences, end-of-life experiences, near-death experiences, remote viewing, spiritual awakening, the whole business. And I compare what's going on in social media to what's happening in mainstream. And then the last three chapters look at why are we looking at this stuff? Why are we looking at altered states as a new way of understanding so-called mental health? And Kofi Annan, he says, we may have different religions, different languages, different coloured skin, but we all belong to one human race. We all share the same basic values. And I challenge that. I think our beliefs are different. So, and we've had so much of Eurocentric and colonial beliefs looking at particularly mental health and pathology. And in the book, I've noted this dilemma between what you get in mainstream in the press and what you find on social media. And I know social media's got problems, but sometimes it feels as if mainstream are playing catch-up. And there's different kind of beliefs, particularly with regard to mental health. And it's very challenging because staff, they've learnt particular ways, they've learnt particular clinical ways about chemical imbalance and diseases of the brain. And now we're hearing about assumptions about manipulated evidence. And then there's the cultural wisdoms of African society, Native American society, Australian society. I give all kinds of examples in the book where people seem to have a much more subtle understanding of consciousness. So this is my question, and it took me, as I say, until I had white hair completely before I could ask it. And it's this question, when visionary experiences are deliberately invoked, is this phenomenology similar to someone who suffers psychosis? And there are specialists and shamans and clairvoyants and mediums. I was lucky when I had experiences, the people around me were shamans and mystics, so it was absolutely normal. But I wondered how many people have those experiences and the people around them are anxious or scared or distressed. And so it's my proposition that some people with extreme experiences, some people with psychosis may be experiencing a near-death experience, an out-of-body experience, an end-of-life experience, or remote perception, together with anxiety or distress. All the people around them are having anxiety or distress. So if people don't have a framework of understanding, and that's what I realized in 1998 when I had that vision, that if people don't have a framework for understanding and get pathologized, if they get scared or violent or the people around them do, then the diagnosis becomes pathologized. So my proposition is that specialists like shamans, psychics, and remote viewers deliberately invoke experiences and turn them on and off. So it's like a radio that you can tune into something and tune it out into different time and different space. And then I suggest if consciousness exists beyond bodily death and other realms can be tuned into, perhaps it's time to reevaluate our own culture-bound explanations for mental suffering. And then this is the last slide, you'll be pleased to hear. And is it possible that people from indigenous communities have a greater awareness of subtle states of consciousness and deeper insights into altered states of consciousness? And I think I'd better end there before I get burnt at the stake. Thank you.